It was one of the most vicious crime sprees in Texas history.
There was murder after murder after murder. This was literally a plague.
They're all linked somehow, not by the same perpetrator, but by hatred.
They were taught to hate.
Acts of almost unimaginable brutality.
I had to prepare myself for what was about to happen.
They wanted you to beg. Please don't hurt me.
It was shocking brutality. I have never seen someone bragging about a murder as horrifying, as vicious as this.
In depth, insightful, in a class of its own, America's leading journal, Vanity Fair, investigates The Killing Trail by Buzz Bissinger. Sinton, Texas, a conservative Christian suburb of Corpus Christi. On this warm summer evening, two friends, 19-year-old Molly Olgan and 18-year-old Christine Chapa, decide to go to Violet Andrews Park.
I had a bad feeling about it. And we were arguing because I didn't want to get out the car. She just wanted to show me where she was baptized. I just felt like, okay, I'm not gonna argue over this. So we were walking, it was really dark, and the park looked scary because of the full moon and the shadows of the trees. And it was windy, and you could hear the leaves and the waves clashing into each other. It reminded me of like a scary movie, and I just had a really bad feeling. We were just walking side by side. We went to the overlook and we just looked at the water. She was just like right there, that's where I was baptized.
It was right over there that Molly was baptized.
Chevis Sandage is helping Christine write her story.
And the girls stood here talking. When they saw a man walk by, instantly they were afraid and they started to leave.
Some guy appears on Molly's side with a gun. And at that moment, it didn't feel real. This only happens in movies. Like, this isn't real.
He told them to descend the overlook, and he walked behind, and Molly was right ahead of Christine. In this moment, she just thought they would be robbed and it would be over. In fact, at one point, she asked him, "Are you going to take us somewhere?" And he said, "It's going to be quick and easy."
That's when my fear started kicking in. It was just scary, you know, hearing the waves and the winds go through the tall grass, hitting each other. And even now, whenever I hear that sound, it takes me back to that night, and it makes me feel ugly. Rape is a very awful word, and it's hard to hear. It scared me, but I had to prepare myself for what was about to happen.
He's calling Molly girl number one. He's calling Christine girl number two. He has a gun in one hand, he has duct tape in the other, and he's forcing each of them to duct tape each other. And that, to me, suggests both hate and sadism. The crime is just beyond abhorrent. He sexually assaults both of them. As he's assaulting one of the women, he wants the other woman to moan. In addition to all that he's doing, all the violence, he wants them to suffer as much humiliation as possible.
After the assault, they were told to stand.
I remember standing there, and then I heard the gun go off. It's like I'm standing there for a little bit, and then I just black out, like everything went black.
He shot them execution style at point blank range in the back of the head.
Molly Olgan dies instantly. But incredibly, Christine Chapa is found alive by two bird watchers 9 hours later.
I don't know how long I was conscious for in the middle of the night, but I know that I got most of my scars on my hands and arms because I was pulling on the thorns we were in, trying to get up and get help. Like, I would sit up halfway and then fall back. It was pitch black, and I had prepared myself that I wasn't gonna make it. I ended up somewhere, it was a really bright room. Everything was white. And I remember the nurses, I couldn't exactly see them, but I could see them cleaning me in the towels and moving me around. But I couldn't feel anything.
Fragments of bullet and bone are lodged in Christine's brain. Her left side is paralyzed. And as she lies in her hospital bed, she learns that her secret is out. Molly was Christine's girlfriend. But Christine was still in the closet, afraid her family would reject her for being gay.
I'm Catholic. My whole family's Catholic. Pretty much South Texas is Catholic, and it's like, being gay is a sin.
The police have told her parents that she's gay. So now, in addition to trying to handle the murder of her friend, which is impossible, there's the added fear that my parents are gonna hate me.
Some of my friends, their parents found out about them being gay, and they pretty much disowned them. I was scared. I didn't want to lose my family.
But it was just the opposite. Her family embraced her, were accepting, loved her as much as ever, if not more, and their biggest regret was they had never met Molly.
They would have loved her. I miss Molly a lot. It's hard. Especially on, her birthday, the day we met, the holidays, why he chose us, why he wanted to kill us, why he hated us. There's no reason.
The crime occurs during Gay Pride Week, and there are vigils and demonstrations from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco. Although it is not being prosecuted as a hate crime, to the LGBT community, this assault on a lesbian couple is motivated by hate. And it reminds Buzz Bissinger of a story he reported 20 years ago.
What strikes me about this case is that the more things change, the more they remain the same.
Bissinger's article, The Killing Trail, documented the torture and murder of dozens of gay men in Texas in the 1990s.
The culture of Texas in the 90s, particularly in terms of attitude towards gays, was Neanderthal. It was a legion of hate. The word gay was not used very much in Texas. It was faggot. It was that sharp-tongued hatred, and it was rampant across the state. It was almost like a wildfire in terms of these crimes happening over and over with shocking brutality, shockingly horrifying, and spiked by hatred.
Hugh Calloway and his partner, Tan Nguyen, have been dating for a year. On this cool October evening, they go to Reverchon Park in Dallas.
Reverchon Park was a nice park. It was a little bit, secluded, and this was a place that gays liked to go to for companionship. Really, the only place you go in Dallas, it was like a small strip about a block long where there was a gay bar and gays would congregate. But otherwise, there was really no place to go except the park where you hoped you could have some sense of safety and privacy.
I had introduced Tan to Riverson Park. After I showed him that place, he wanted to go back. And so what we got in the habit of doing is going to McDonald's. And then we would sit and eat and watch the people go back and forth and talk and all this.
And as they walk to the picnic table, Calloway notices three young men following them.
And so we went to the top of the hill. These guys were watching people pass by. And then one of them pulls a pistol out and waves it at some people that are coming towards, waving them away. Get out of here. At that moment, I walked up behind Tom and I just grabbed him by the hands and put him against the table. And I leaned up next to his ear and I said, Tom, be still, because we're about to be robbed. And just do what they say and give them anything they want. And I thought that all they would do was rob us and go on about their business. But that's not what happened.
This was a scene of torture. And the detail that resonates with me is as they're beating the crap out of them, they're also taking the McDonald's burger. And they're taking a bite. Smack. And they're taking another bite. Smack. And that's what torturers do, because they want it to last as long as it possibly can.
And at the same time, they're taking articles of clothing. You know, I had a pair of lizard skin cowboy boots on. One of them wanted those. Another one wanted my leather hat. And their eyes were all bugged out.
Calloway said it was the anticipatory look on their face. The look that you have when you're about to have sex. He called it. It was that look of excitement, of bloodlust. And that's when Calloway basically knows they're going to kill them.
On this October evening in Dallas's Revachon Park, three men hunting for a gay couple to beat and rob set upon Hugh Calloway and Tan Nguyen, a Vietnamese refugee and successful businessman. Tan is wearing a solid gold necklace.
All of a sudden, they see the necklace, and one of them grabs it. Then the one on this side of the table, he grabs it. And they're choking him, and his tongue's hanging out. It turned into an orgy of violence and sadism that lasted probably another 30 minutes at least.
Tan was the American dream personified. He comes to Dallas. He opens a high-end tailoring shop in which he's doing custom suits for Nordstrom's and Neiman Marcus. He's a taxpayer. He loves this country. This country is the personification of freedom. But in their warped, sick minds, he represented a gook fag. And what do you do with gook fags? You torture them, you beat the crap out of them to the point where Hugh somehow put his body on top of Tan, trying to save him from the blows. He's bleeding profusely. So before you're gonna kill him, let's really beat the living crap out of him. That's the kind of people these predators were.
It just became more and more and more furious and more urgent because they weren't getting what they wanted. And you know what they wanted? They wanted you to beg. Please don't hurt me. If I thought it would have done any good, I would have.
The savage beating lasts more than 30 minutes.
And he looks at us. And then just like, bam.
Hugh is shot in the leg. His leg basically shatters. Tan is shot in the stomach. He's still alive, but it's not over for him by any stretch of the imagination.
Tan struggles away from me, and he starts off towards the car, and they caught him. And they started beating him up. They pulled his little shorts down to his knees so that he couldn't run. And they held him down and beat him in the head with a rock. And there's nothing I can do about it. You don't know how guilty I felt. I showed him this place and all of that, and I should have been carrying a pistol in the car and just carried it with us when we went up the hill. Didn't do it.
Just before dawn, Hugh Calloway is found barely breathing. Tan is lying in the bushes. His eyes still open, his arms outstretched. When the police start to move Tan's body, Hugh demands to look at his partner.
I made them stop that gurney and let me see him, and I made them put light on him. And he was deceased. Laying there in the dirt, like a dog that had been cast into the ditch.
Tan Nguyen's killer, 19-year-old Corey Burley, is caught a few days later when he tries to pawn Tan's solid gold necklace. Burley names his two accomplices, Frederick Eugene Kirby and Freddie Earl Thornton. Both are charged with armed robbery. Corey Burley, who admits to stalking gay men because he considers them weak, is convicted of murder and receives a life sentence. But then, so does Hugh Calloway.
The life sentence that Hugh lives is terrible guilt. I could have done more. I should have done more. My leg was shattered. I was helpless. But in a sense, I'm the one responsible. It was clear to me he would never, ever, ever recover from this.
Tan Nguyen was brutally and sadistically murdered because of who he was. I was shot and left for dead because of who I am.
I had post-traumatic stress disorder. There's like a big hole in me that can never be filled, you know? I have not had one relationship since then. None. I don't want it.
The murder of Tan Nguyen would turn out to be one of the first of many gay murders, documented in Buzz Bissinger's investigation of the killing trail. More than 30 gay men are attacked and killed throughout the state of Texas, but no one seems to be paying attention. Mel White was the dean of the largest gay church in Dallas at the time.
The media wasn't interested. We kept saying, there's a murder, there's a murder, there's a murder. Do you see any kind of pattern here? And the media, they weren't interested.
Police weren't putting them together. The only person who put them together was this wonderful woman, Diane Hardy Garcia, who was just this tireless advocate on behalf of the gay community. And she noticed that this is not just isolated. This is not just happening to East Texas or South Texas or West Texas or Dallas. They're all linked somehow, linked not by the same perpetrator, but linked by hatred, pure, unadulterated hatred of gays.
What Diane Hardy Garcia finds most disturbing is the age of the attackers. Most are teenage boys.
As I watched a few of them in their trials, you realized how very, very young they were. And their lives are going to be destroyed now, too. And I started to become aware that they weren't born haters. They were taught to hate. And so when you preach and teach hatred, it does have consequences. They were hearing it from their ministers. They were hearing it from their politicians, and it kind of gave them license.
God hates fudge. Except you repent, you shall all likewise perish.
How can you be gay when you're facing death from AIDS?
Homosexuality is moral perversion and is always wrong.
In the 90s, when there were so many murders taking place, pastors and priests picked up from Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and all the rest of these national speakers this hyperbole about what a threat gays are. And so they just began to echo what the televangelists were saying. It was really awful because it's a very short trail from the pastor's mouth to the death of a gay person.
People knew where gay bars were. People knew where gay people were congregating. And at the same time, they knew that if they victimized us, sometimes we wouldn't report being robbed or mugged or bashed because we would have to be outed. The criminals who were targeting us then became aware of that too. They could find us.
There was murder after murder after murder, and no one was putting together in Texas that this was literally a plague, that something should be done. Because law enforcement officers go to the same churches that gay victims do. And they hear the same stuff. And I think they just were reflecting what the church was saying.
In fact, gay bashing has become something of a new sport and the focus of national media attention.
Hate crimes against lesbians and gays in America must come to an end. A climate of hate is, if not being nurtured, at least is being tolerated in our country.
Anti-gay violence continues to be a widespread and profoundly destructive plague across this nation.
Donald Aldrich is on death row. He admits that he resents gays because they are rich and successful. a resentment he freely shares with police.
Well, I do not like homosexuals. I've got a lot against them. And a lot of times homosexuals are known to carry quite a bit of money on them. So that's where it comes in with hitting them. Kind of more or less like a vengeful type thing.
Aldrich was the oldest member of a group of gay bashers in Tyler who call themselves the CB Gang.
Some of the members were as young as 14, all the way up to about 29, 30, which was Donald Aldrich. And they weren't really a gang per se. They were just a group of kids, for the most part, loosely associated by the Citizen Band radio. Some of them actually had their Citizen Band radios on their bicycles. So he was the senior member of this group of misfits. Someone one time asked me, was he kind of like the Pied Piper? And that's a kind of a good way to describe this guy. Here's an older guy that's been in prison, kind of cool dude. And he just kind of had this charisma about him that suckered some of these young kids in.
I saw in the state of Texas how teenagers primarily felt they were absolutely justified in what they did. And that's really the most shocking and horrifying thing of all.
Aldrich and his teenage gang are about to commit one of the most vicious and sadistic murders on the killing trail. Donald Aldrich is being questioned by police in Tyler, Texas, about the murder of a gay man.
Are you telling us that you want to talk to us without an attorney, or you want an attorney?
I've got nothing to hide. I want this cleared up. I didn't really want him to speak to anyone. Okay.
The crime is one of the most barbaric murders in the town's history. But Aldrich appears calm. He doesn't think it's a big deal because, after all, the victim was a homosexual.
Teenagers, if you talk with a lot of teenagers, they'll tell you, well, let's go bag bashing. And they go up to one of the bag hang out, and they go up, maybe the hell out of the bag, take the money and take off.
He's proud of this. He somehow thinks in his own warped mind, it's like he did a public service.
Beat him up, take his wallet, take his money, and take his car. Just as simple and easy as that. Simple Tom told us this.
I have never seen anything like it. Someone bragging about a murder as horrifying, as vicious as this.
Nicholas West, 23, a gay man in Tyler, a conservative Texas town.
I related a lot to Nicholas. He was close to my age. As I think many people did when they learned about and read about Nicholas, really believed that it could have been us.
On this November evening, Nicholas goes to Bergfell Park, searching for someone like him.
You have to understand, there's nowhere in Tyler, Texas for gay people to gather. There was nowhere. The closest gay bar is over 100 miles away.
Bergfell Park had the reputation of being a place where they could go. But then the problem is that the fag bashers and the murderers become aware, hey, this is where the faggots congregate. This is where we should pluck them off. And that's what happened.
Donald Aldrich and two members of his CB gang, Henry Dunn and David McMillan, are in the park that night looking for a victim to enjoy what Aldrich calls simple fun.
Back here on the streets where folks will come park their car, come into the park at night, either meet up and hook up in the bathrooms. There was a payphone back in the day here. Donald Aldrich would come down here, get on the phone, be the lure. That particular night, Nicholas West came and took his bait.
Aldrich follows Nicholas to his truck and once inside, pulls out a .357 Magnum and demands all of his money.
It was kind of a simple robbery. Y'all just wanted money and get the hell out. Why did y'all spend another hour just playing with a guy, scaring the hell out of him?
Having fun.
You kind of got off to scaring the living hell out of him.
Yeah. That was what I got off to. It was just the fact that this man
damn near pissing all over himself. It was just the look that come over his face. When the gun comes out, he realizes you've got a gun on him. I think that was what kind of hooked me, was just the look of fear.
Aldrich and his gang drive Nick West to a deserted area outside of Tyler, known as the Pits.
So that night, they parked here, took him out of his car, they walked him up the hill, and he knew that he was gonna die. He knew that he's walking to his death.
Pits, it's very, very, very desolate. It's really in the middle of nowhere. And they take his shoes off, and then they pull his pants down.
What did you say the guy did when y'all killed him Tuesday night?
He pants.
What did you think when you saw that?
I just died laughing.
You thought that was pretty damn funny.
I thought that was funny.
He loved causing that sense of terror and fear, but they weren't done. In a sense, they were just beginning.
They find that he had some money in his pocket that he didn't tell them about or he forgot about or something. And that kind of makes Donald Aldrich mad. He just presumes that he was lying.
And takes his gun, which is a 357 Magnum. And as he put it, because I interviewed him on death row, bitch slaps him, you know, not hits him. Big difference. Bitch slaps him and causes a horrible bruise on the side of his head. Just all part of the torture and the plucking of the wings before the final act.
In my 53 years, I spent law enforcement working my murders and sexual assaults and robberies. I can't imagine that kind of terror. I can't imagine the terror he felt.
The final game is a boxing match. Henry Dunn tells Nicholas to put up his fists and fight. Standing there in his stocking feet and soiled underwear, bleeding from his right eye, Nicholas refuses to fight.
And he hits Nicholas many times, and Nicholas isn't doing anything, and, you know, Henry's next act is, you know, the hell with this, and takes out his gun and shoots him, more than once.
Aldrich and McMillan fire as well. Nicholas West's body is riddled with 25 gunshot wounds.
I'd gone to Bergfield Park, and I went to the quarry where they shot him so many times they couldn't tell the exit wounds and the entrance wounds. I saw hatred in action in a way I'd never seen it before, and I was sickened by it. Nicholas West died because of the toxic environment of Tyler, Texas. Not simply because Aldrich is a killer, but because that environment is a killer.
To Reverend Mel White, the church bears some of the blame for condemning homosexuality based on a selective reading of the Bible.
There's something like 31,000 lines in the Bible, and they pick six of them and take them right out of the context of the Bible and use them to clobber us.
Lines like this from the Old Testament. If a man lies with a male, it is a detestable act, and they shall be put to death.
Where did that lie get into their hearts and heads? It didn't come in at birth. That was nurtured. That lie was nurtured, and almost invariably, by religious people.
For Nicholas West, God's condemnation would follow him to the grave.
I spoke at the memorial service for Nicholas West. His pastor was saying homosexuality is a sin and a crime. He is dead today because of his sin. They even used the funeral to preach the lie.
With the torture and murder of Nicholas West, the gay community begins to ask how many more will die before something is done to protect us. The torture and murder of Nicholas West in 1993 becomes a rallying point for the gay community in Texas.
I got directly involved because of the murder of Nicholas West.
I thought at the time that if we publicized that murder and how he was killed so brutally, that surely there would be a reaction. We're just asking for our government to stand in opposition to violence.
A police informant names the killers, and all three are arrested and tried. Donald Aldrich is found guilty of Nicholas West's murder and is executed by lethal injection in 2004. Henry Earl Dunn is also convicted of murder. He is executed in 2003. David McMillan, at 17, the youngest member of the gang, is convicted of aggravated robbery and kidnapping and is sentenced to life in prison.
These young men who killed somebody because of their hate were going to ultimately die because of their hate. And that's why we wanted to do something before. If we knew that these young men had committed prior hate crimes, if those crimes had been reported and taken seriously earlier, perhaps we could have prevented those murders. And that's why the hate crime law became such an important issue.
Nicholas West's murder starts a campaign to pass a hate crime law that protects the rights of homosexuals. But getting support for it is not easy.
Let love triumph and let hate die.
We had a major rally in East Texas to try to bring attention to what happened to Nicholas. But the other most shocking thing was not one public official in that area, and I called everyone, would attend that rally. Not one would denounce the murder of Nicholas West. Not one.
And it is not just politicians. Crimes against homosexuals are being treated casually, even by judges.
The victims were homosexuals. They were out in the homosexual area picking up teenage boys. Had they not been out there trying to spread AIDS around, they'd still be alive today.
When you have judges condemning gays and law enforcement, and when you have the pulpit, it's toxic. You have three toxic entities all saying the same thing. Gays are murderers, gays are perverts, gays prey on our children. Gays, in a sense, must be sent underground or eradicated.
The campaign to pass a hate crime law that protects homosexuals is an uphill battle.
Texas is full of special protections. Texas enhances penalties for crimes against oil wells, for crimes against cattle, for crimes against public officials. We enhance penalties all the time. So it was the height of hypocrisy to say we wouldn't enhance penalties for hate crimes.
It takes 10 years to convince Texas legislators to pass the hate crime law.
Now, one would argue is, why do you have a hate crimes law in the first place? But I think it has value because I think it reminds us that there's hate out there. And I think there is a difference between crimes of passion and crimes based on hatred.
In June of 2012, Christine Chapa and her girlfriend, Molly Olgan, are raped and then shot, execution style, by a stranger. Molly dies instantly, but Christine survives the bullet that tears through her brain.
To think that I almost lost my life, you know, almost lost my family because of him. It was very hard dealing with, you know, that somebody shot me in the head and wanted me dead, like, hated me that much. Like, I was nothing, like, I wasn't a person.
When she regains consciousness, Christine helps authorities create a sketch of her attacker, a white male in his 20s with brown hair, standing 5'8" tall and weighing about 140 pounds.
I have to stand up for both of us for what's right, and I have been waiting so many years for him to get caught. I'm ready to look him in the eyes and tell him what I feel.
But despite extensive efforts to track down Molly Olgan's killer, police have no suspects. When suddenly, in June of 2014, 2 full years after the attack, a mysterious letter is delivered to the Chapa home. The letter even names the alleged killer.
If it weren't for him, I wouldn't have to be going through this. He did this to Molly and I. He took Molly away and he did this.
But in a strange twist, the killer named in the letter would not be the one standing trial.
Is the first to lose and the last to come back because of all the little muscles in your hand and fingers. So I have to really focus on my hand because my goal was at least to be able to grip a cup of water. I will be happy with just that.
Christine Chapa struggles to recover from the injuries caused by the bullet that tore through the right side of her skull. The police have no suspects. When suddenly, there's an unexpected break in the case.
Flash forward about 2 years, and this very mysterious letter lands in the neighborhood where Christine lives. It's intended for Christine and her parents. They get it, they open it, and there's a very, very detailed recounting of the crime, including details that only the killer would know. And there's a picture. Picture of the so-called perpetrator.
The letter provides a name, Cristobal Melcher. The photograph of Melcher is torn in half, cutting out the person standing next to him. When police question him, Melcher has an ironclad alibi. He was on active military duty at the time of the attack. But he does recognize the photo.
So Melcher sees this photo and he says, yes, I know who's in this photograph. This was a photo of David Strickland and myself. This was taken by David Strickland's wife, Laura. Clearly, David's been cut out of the photo, but I remember it well. Now, the police had already had an interaction with David Strickland.
26-year-old David Strickland lived right next to Violet Andrews Park. He told police about a suspicious white vehicle in the neighborhood on the night of the crime.
5 days after the crime, David Strickland went to the police voluntarily and offered information about a vehicle that he claimed he had seen in the area. It's very odd that he would introduce himself into the case when he was not a person of interest at that point.
It turns out that Strickland is a former friend of Melcher. The two have had a falling out. Police eventually search Strickland's car, and in the trunk, they find a .45 caliber Glock pistol. A ballistic test confirms it is the murder weapon. And they find something else, a bag.
When police found the bag and when the DA looked at it, because it was evidence, you know, he said, basically, this is a rape-to-go kit. You know, this has all the tools and implements of what someone carries around when they're planning a rape. There's nothing missing.
In the bag, police find a knife, handcuffs, bolt cutters, pepper spray, condoms, lubricant, and black Under Armour gloves. The same brand worn by Molly Olgan's killer. David Strickland is arrested and charged with aggravated sexual assault, robbery, kidnapping, and capital murder. While prosecutors believe the crime may have been motivated by hate, they decide not to charge Strickland with a hate crime because that requires a higher burden of proof. David Strickland has pleaded not guilty.
The most disturbing part of all of this to me is that 1 month after this crime, David Strickland stood here on this platform with Laura, his girlfriend, waiting for the justice of the peace to arrive to marry them. At the scene of the crime, where you can look down and you can see the red grass stained from the girl's blood.
It's the ultimate in perverse, horrible cat and mouse. He's getting off on this somehow.
And I try to fathom David's decision to marry his bride in this place. And I cannot.
It's more than perversion. It's just outright cold-blooded hate.
20 years ago, when someone was a victim of a hate crime, the fact that they were gay might not have even been acknowledged in the media. And one of the remarkable things about this case is that from the very beginning, the authorities acknowledged that these girls were a couple, and it was never a secret or something to hide. So that is really fascinating and wonderful and important.
He took Molly's life away, and he ruined part of me. I'm not the same person. You know, there's some things I may never get back, but I still gotta keep moving forward, which is hard sometimes.
The thing about cases like this is they don't end with a shooting, they don't end with a torture, they don't end with a killing. They go on, forever.
This is a story of resilience and survival. And this is a young woman who isn't a victim. She is tough, spirited, and courageous. And she does not give up.
Sometimes I wonder why, like, I didn't die too, why I lived. I think God left one of us here to be able to stand up for both of us, to put him away forever.